It's not episode 167, is it? 160.
Yeah,
is it?
Is. Yeah, yeah.
Why does it just say Zelda? Hey, welcome to episode 167 of Front Seat Gamer. I'm Nick. I'm here with Paul.
Hey.
And Blake.
Hey, Nick.
And special guest Josiah.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome back. You haven't been on the podcast for like 5 or more years, I would guess.
I don't remember how long, but it was a while.
Yeah.
It was a while.
It was for our Stellaris special when everyone in the office was playing Stellaris for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And you're back now, and you're here to talk about another completely inscrutable game, and that is it X4? Is that what it's called?
Yes. Not to be confused with 4X.
Which is what Stellaris is.
Yeah, yeah.
There is 4X elements
but
to it, though.
Not very many, and that's not why they named it that.
So why did they name it that?
It is, I believe, I actually haven't played the whole series or much. Well, no, this is the first game that I've played in the series. But I believe that there was a name of a ship, like some kind of expedition in the first game that they made, and it was, you know, they just called the game X or something like that.
Oh, that was it. Yeah.
And this is the fourth in the X series.
Yeah. So now it's the sequel of that game times four. Yeah.
Does that predate like SEO? Like, how do you search for that? Game X.
Well, it's
I don't know the release date.
It is tough just Googling X4.
Yeah.
Because you end up with, like, I don't know, guns or something as well. Think, like, just
or like those old booze barrels that are like, we got some X's on here because we want you to know that.
Yeah. Like, you always have to Google X4 Foundations because that's the actual title of the
game. Yes. They all have, they do have subtitles. Yeah.
That's good. That makes it easier.
Yeah.
So for people who don't know what it is, give us the lowdown.
So X4 is essentially a trying to do everything space game, which is sort of similar to, say, Freelancer or something from the old days, which is just kind of like you have a spaceship and you can fly around and try and, you know, build an empire or just be Han Solo or you know, start doing space trucking because for some reason you find that fun.
it's so weird because that is what I did.
Yeah.
Why doesn't that surprise me at all?
I started space trucking and then I also bought more ships so I can get them to do space trucking. And now I just have a space trucking.
Yeah.
Like
have you ever tried Farm Simulator? I feel like you
Or Euro Truck Simulator.
Yeah. I've never tried Euro, but like
Train Simulator.
Well, I was thinking of Euro Truck Simulator not too long ago because before playing X4, I was playing a little bit of Elite Dangerous. And I was like, Elite Dangerous is just like the Euro Truck Simulator of space.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. And it's interesting that I think Elite Dangerous has the best trucking feel in terms of the engine sounds and the immersion of like flying your truck around and and like landing it on a station is really nice. But X4 goes a little bit further in the like, your trucking matters, and there's like this big simulated universe that's doing a thousand things with, you know, every like scrap of metal that you move around.
So that was it. How do you talk about this game? Because you start off basically like Elite Dangerous. You're just a guy in a little ship, and you can do a few missions. But after a while, it expands out into this whole economic space sim where you are making sure, well, at least how I'm playing it.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe that's just the game you're playing.
At least how I'm playing it. I'm making sure that certain stations, like that build ships for NPC ships, are supplied with all the things they need to build ships in an ongoing war against an enemy faction.
Oh.
Well,
do you supply the enemy as well?
No.
Could you?
Yes, you could. But there is a global enemy.
It's very profitable to supply both sides of a war.
Both jumped on that. Oh, absolutely, you could.
And I'm pretty sure I am actually.
Yeah. Wait. No. When you say you're not supplying, you're trading between what is it? The Holy Order of the Pontifex and the Argon Federation, right?
Yes. Who are both at war with each other.
They are at war with each other. Yeah.
And I'm just taking from one and giving to the other.
Now,
it's a bit one way. Okay. Yeah.
It is one way because. There is this global enemy, this Xenon faction that is always an enemy.
Yeah, he's trying to eat both of them.
And so I am supplying this Argon, what are they, Argon Federation or something?
Yeah, I think Federation is their
with
title.
Parts from another faction that they are at war with so that they can continue fighting this Xenon enemy.
Right, I see. Now, you both were familiar with the same war. So this is a pre-scripted war. This is not a naturally emergent war.
It is so a lot of 4X games, and this is I think kind of where X4 sort of diverges from them quite a lot. A lot of them are built to be very emergent.
Yeah.
And this game has emergent elements and even randomized start conditions, but nowhere near as much as like empire building from scratch would give you.
So it's a more handcrafted sort of scenario.
Yes.
But it sounds like it gives you the freedom to engage with that scenario how you want.
Yeah, it has a pretty definite start point and then no definite end point.
Right. Cool. So, Blake, what are you selling?
What to?
Yeah, and I guess take me through the process of, let's say you sit down for a session.
Yeah,
what's the session length?
Well, first off, let me just take it back.
Easy.
I'm trying to craft the evolution of this game, because like. I really want to get across that you start very, very small. You start as one guy and you
are Adam.
Yeah, if you want. Yeah. And you're really just doing missions. Like Paul had done a lot of this, right?
I'm still just doing missions.
Yeah.
So I haven't gotten to this like build an empire shit at all.
So the interesting thing is that Blake's path on this game might be very similar to my path on this game, but they've built a game that is trying to accommodate a lot of different ways to play.
Yeah.
And you do not have to build an empire.
Yeah.
Ever.
Okay.
You also don't have to do a mission ever if you don't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's what the Blake
methodology. It doesn't even really encourage you finishing the first mission.
No. It doesn't encourage you to do anything in particular, which is terrifying.
Because if you're going to talk about like the start of the game, you got to like actually talk about the start of the game where you start and like there's unknown. So I bought all the DLCs.
Yeah.
Because you had them. And so I was like, I want to play that game. Uh-huh. And then like you go to start a new game and there's like all of a sudden like 30 different options for starts. And I'm like, okay, it's a little bit overwhelming. But like, let's just go sandbox, have a play around.
Yeah.
So you get into your ship and you can't fly it because you saw that there was a start that said flight tutorial.
Uh-huh.
But you didn't take that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So you got to like back out. And then you start a new game, a flight tutorial.
Uh huh.
Because then you just like
now you want to be able to leave the launch pad.
You can like fire a thruster, which is helpful.
Yeah.
Helpful in a space sim to be able to like move your ship.
It's worth mentioning that many games have solutions for a player sitting down without knowing how to play.
Yeah.
This game does not employ any of those.
Yeah.
They're just like
I don't even feel like that tutorial was added very early on in the development or anything either.
Yeah.
I feel like they just went, oh, some people aren't going to be able to fly. Let's just make a start that's how to fly your ship.
Yeah. I wonder, it kind of feels like when you start the game, it should open up a Google browser of just commonly asked questions.
Yeah.
It does a very good job of coercing you into that flow.
Okay, yeah.
That it does guide you into Googling a bunch of X4 things pretty quite quickly.
There is a lot of, the first... Even now, I've been playing for 50 plus hours, I think, and I'm still Googling just random things.
Can you remember the last thing you Googled?
What was it? It was actually I don't.
Specific to the game. I should clarify.
I know what I Googled last.
Yeah.
So I'm stuck at the moment. I've got a mission where I need to get 10 singularity somethings. I need to go buy them, and then I need to take them to this other ship to get this ship to go away.
Mm-hmm.
but my cargo is full.
Oh.
My cargo is full of other stuff that I've picked up along the way.
Uh-huh.
So I googled X4 how to get rid of cargo.
Uh-huh.
This game makes you Google like... Every Google you do, you just sound so stupid, but you've
got to do
it.
The interface for dropping your cargo, you'd think, you know, I'm flying this ship. There must be a jettison button. It's hidden pretty deep.
That is something I have wondered for a while. Of like, can I just dump cargo?
So you can. Yeah. You can just dump it. I didn't want to just dump it though. Like I've got like so much.
In fact,
there's valuable stuff in there.
You can end up in an interesting situation where a pirate has spotted you, has decided that your cargo hold is very valuable, and demands that you drop your cargo, or they will shoot you with guns. If you were to try and drop your cargo at this point, you might. Yeah, you're furiously Googling would probably not be fast enough.
Yes, sir. Quick question. How?
Excuse me. Explore how to drop cargo.
Do you have a step-by-step tutorial? Over. Okay, so I don't have this game. I want to clarify that. I am kind of vaguely interested in it.
Yeah.
My big question, I think, is like, what is the selling point? Like, what is... considering what sounds like serious usability issues.
Oh yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
What is the draw for someone who, let's say, has Zelda available to them? Oh boy, that's
for,
a lot of silence.
For me, the way I ended up finding this game was I was in the mood for a space sim like Elite Dangerous.
Sure.
And I played a bit of Elite Dangerous and I was like, really, it's kind of, I feel like it's kind of shallow.
Okay.
Because once you realize you're just kind of trucking stuff around in your one ship and then what am I doing? I guess I'm just upgrading my ship and then so I can truck more stuff.
Yeah. And the stuff like drops out of the ether and drops into the ether as soon as you're done removing it.
Yeah. I wanted something that had more going on.
Uh-huh.
I'd known of the X series for quite a while. Like, I remember looking at X3 and thinking, like, I should get into this, but it looked too complicated.
I'll wait until a lot of DLC comes out for the sequel.
Yeah. I'll wait 12 years for the sequel to come out.
Yeah.
And so I got it. And then started playing it. And I was like, okay, it's got a lot of the similar things to Elite Dangerous. You just go and buy, you can do missions, you can move cargo around.
Yep.
But then gradually, as I played more and more, like I'd heard that you could build stations, right? And you could build like a shipping empire, essentially. And I was like, that sounds pretty cool. I'm going to, like, that's interesting to me. And then gradually from just doing missions here and there, I gradually started building up this shipping empire where I suddenly realized I had like a dozen ships just flying all over the place from station to station, all doing like trades. And I just had like money coming in constantly. And then suddenly I'm like, I'm upgrading my ship and I'm able to actually fight against the...
It sounds like Space Big Ambi Sounds.
It actually felt a little bit like that.
Josiah looks confused. Big Ambitions was a game that came out.
Oh, okay.
And it's about running a business. You start off literally just stocking a shop.
Mm-hmm.
And you build up to, you know,
and it scales. Yeah.
Yeah. And a thing I found interesting in my mind was that all these missions that I'd relied on for income and just content, I realized I hadn't actually done any of them in like days because I was now creating my own content.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, like I had my own plans of things I wanted to do in the game. And then doing the missions, which were even just the story missions, seemed like it was taking me out of the thing I actually like wanted to do.
Interesting.
And the thing I wanted to do was like affect the universe as a whole and have an impact on this like constant war that's happening with these Xenons.
Sure.
And that's when I started getting into like, I started wondering like why this faction that's getting attacked by these Xenons aren't building any ships. Yeah. And then I realized it's because their shipping yards don't have the resources.
Right.
So then I started getting into like shipping resources to things and then seeing them suddenly, a few hours later, a few giant ships pop up and start like attacking
the Xenon,
and I'm having an actual like impact in the wider cool. like universe.
Really cool.
It's a good way to describe that. I think like the short summation for like why you would play this game is probably depth of simulation.
Right. Okay.
Right. Like it is a more simulated game than most. But Paul, you had a...
Oh no, I was just gonna say that I'm still just doing random mission things for the most part. I don't even really want to do like the build a trade empire thing.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying doing like just little dogfights in my shitty little ship in the middle of space, and you fly around and there's so much space. Like they've done a really good job of making the thing just feel massive.
Is there a lot of
it's overwhelming? It's pretty big. It's too big. But I guess it's because you might want to replay it from a different angle or something.
Right. Mm. And it's probably also just however many years of DLC piled on at this point.
Yes, that's part of it for sure.
Is there a lot of like downtime? For example, if I want to, I've just done this big delivery and I'm like, I want to go back to the main mission and it's on a completely different planet.
Mm-hmm.
Is there like, you know, 15 minutes of travel? How does that work?
Usually for me there is.
Okay.
They have, it depends on where you are because they do have these space highways. So you have your travel, what's it called? Travel mode or whatever.
Which is just your engines go real fast.
Yeah, yeah. So there's your fast, your boost, I guess, or whatever. Yeah. Mm. So there's that. But there's also like giant highways through the main section.
Space highways.
Ooh. And when you go on those, you just fly super, super quick. And you will get to where you're going in like seconds.
Wow. Yeah,
but like... if you've got to go across the whole like galaxy, I guess, it can take like a few minutes, even by going through the highways.
Like, yeah, their downtime is like it exists, and it kind of exists for like specific economic and strategic reasons.
Yeah,
like especially carrying large amounts of stuff places will usually take a big slow ship or many ships doing lots of complicated things. As well as, for instance, you know, there's a big fight going on. Well, you can't necessarily just get a bunch of ships to that fight in time if they weren't already nearby. But at the same time, they add a bunch of things to just, like, cut out downtime that you're not having fun with.
Okay.
So you can have fun, like, personally driving your space truck because there's a lot of driving, I guess, in the game. You can like boost into your travel mode. You might swerve around asteroids more efficiently. You might kind of like curve into the gates and like you could do a run of cargo faster than the AI could do it.
Right. Okay.
Essentially. But if you're not having fun with that, you can also research like this teleportation thing, which I'm not sure if you guys have gotten
I've got access to the research option, but I've not researched it.
Yeah, that's exactly what
I meant to. Yeah. So once you if you pay a little bit of resources into it, probably like once you've explored the game a small amount, you can just start teleporting between any of the ships that you own.
Oh, wow.
Which means that like you might set up something that has a bit of runtime to it, but then you can immediately go and start solving another problem somewhere else or go do your side mission.
Start peppering instantly. Your ships across the galaxy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
You can also... So I have... I think there's a setting or something where when you are in travel mode and you want to look at your map, it knocks you out of travel mode.
Yeah,
there's a setting that you can not have that.
Really?
Which I don't know why they have that because...
So the reason why is that this is a very simulation-y game and there are ships that travel at 1.2 kilometers per second in travel mode, and there are ships that travel at 15 kilometers per second in travel mode.
Because
and some of them, you don't want to not be looking at where you're going map. For...
Because I had that exact feeling where I was traveling a long distance quite often, and I couldn't do anything. I'm just sitting there looking at space go by, and I would want to like look at my map.
Yeah,
and then as soon as I look at my map, it knocks me out of travel mode, so I'm just going regular speed again.
So you use autopilot instead, because when you've got autopilot on, you can look at the maps.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the, like, their compromise. This is, like, their vaguest attempt at, like, usability. is that if you have an autopilot going, you're free to like look at your UI.
Well, that's good.
But that default protects you from basically like flying, you know, minutes of real-time travel out into the depths of a sector far away from everything.
Overshot my location because I'm busy looking at the map and realize like, wait a minute, where am I? And then I close my map and look and I'm like halfway across a sector.
Isn't the point of looking at the map to know where you are?
Well, here's the thing.
No.
I'm not looking at myself on the map. Yeah. I'm looking at all the dozens and dozens of ships I have flying around the galaxy because some, like, there was
that's
a little...
weird. One of these ships is way out of here.
What's this pilot doing? What an idiot. What's he on his phone?
What idiot AI? Oh, no.
Because there is a level of upkeep for the trade, your trade ships that you have flying around. Because if you trade, I guess, too well and supply an area too well, that product no longer becomes in supply.
Sure.
And then that person can't sell their stuff where they were originally. So you have to then find somewhere else for them and then like update the trade route.
Usually,
when I'm flying from location to location, I'm looking at that and making sure that everything is. I'm doing the books.
You're doing your management, Sim.
And really, it's reasonably deep. Like, there's a lot to do like a space trucking empire. But it's interesting that you can also just let the AI do it.
Yep.
And they won't do it as well, but they'll build you a couple of ships to upgrade into if you just wanted to play freelancer or whatever.
Now, I don't want to manage trade routes for hours.
That doesn't sound fascinating to you. I love it.
If I'm flying from point A to point B for, let's say, a main mission, how likely am I to just find other stuff to do along the way?
Incredibly
likely, depending on where it is. There are some reasonably calm backwaters, which I think kind of exist for people who want to just like go slowly and not have to defend themselves constantly.
Yeah.
And there are some hotspots where, for instance, where Blake's living right now has this main highway and they put a gate to a sector of space entirely infested by self-replicating killbots right next to that highway.
Yeah. Right.
It's pretty happening
it's
over
a
there.
Rough neighborhood.
Mm. Yeah. There's also like a bunch of, there's like these, it's only one mission I've found, but I've got to find like 30, I think, of these little stations that have like a puzzle that I've got to like solve. It's not really a puzzle. You've just got to find the right things for it to.
Right.
Yeah, X4 in general, like they have so many things. This is essentially their Korok seeds, right?
Yeah, okay.
But the level of execution falls far below Zelda. They are, find some buttons and push them.
Yep, yeah.
Sort of thing.
I mean, in fairness, Zelda is lift a rock. So
still hit the log.
What are the things that you're talking about? Is it those data
data vaults? Yeah.
See, even that is quite interesting though, because you have to it's like a small space station.
Yeah.
They have to fly up to, park your ship, then exit from your ship in a spacesuit. And
which feels very vulnerable.
Yeah,
it is very vulnerable.
Around this whole thing, looking for these like buttons to hit, and like I the space suit stuff, I actually like really like a lot. It just adds a little extra.
Yeah, they have a lot of like immersion stuff like that, which didn't strictly need to be there. Isn't even done extremely well. Like walking around on a station, it exists, but they weren't able to make it like truly immersive.
Mm.
You get little glimmers of immersion when you're like, wow, I can like, you know, like seeing space or like standing on a station that you built or something like that can be pretty interesting.
But
there's like, you can go into your spacesuit. You can walk around on your ship. If you're on a big ship, like a couple of your crew members will come and like stand around and talk about doing ship system stuff. They're not actually doing that, but they have voice lines and stuff.
It's a play for you. The spacesuit stuff. Sorry, it also helps for me with the scale of things, because when you're flying around in your ship, you can get this like this off. Like, the feeling of scale can be kind of off. Like, things can seem smaller than they really are.
Because you're moving so quickly.
Yeah, because you're moving so quickly, and you're, like, a reasonably large ship. And then as soon as you exit, you're like, oh, actually, my ship is like the size of a like three-story building. And the space station is giant. You know, it's like the size of a city. Like,
yeah, and like my default engines push me at like 300 meters a second, or and that's it. And that's like the slow mode, whereas I'm going 5 meters per second in this little RCS suit.
How flexible is the simulator in that, like, okay, could I get to a point where my ship or fleet is strong enough that I could, if I wanted to, blow up one of these like friendly space stations?
Oh yes, you can definitely do that. You can blow up all the friendly space stations if you wanted
that's
to.
That's cool. How about like a planet? Can you go full Death Star?
The game doesn't actually do planets. They're planets. Like in the skybox, and there's a couple of systems that interact with them. There are planets will build a space station to trade with the rest of the space station space.
Right. Okay. So they're scenery more than anything else.
They're scenery and backstory, and there's like a very late game terraforming thing where you can like build a planet, but planets are abstract, and all of the like space station economy and spaceborne economy is kind of like the entirety of the game's focus, which is a rare scope, you know, limit in a game that has very few scope limits.
That's cool. Okay. That's honestly probably for the best, because
it really is. Yeah,
that's when things get really weird in space games.
Yeah, I find that like when games try to introduce planets, and either they're barren and huge and just sort of like AI generated lumpy masses,
which is like just about all of them.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean that's the Elite Dangerous thing, is like they released planets that you could land on, and every single one of them is just a barren wasteland.
Yeah.
With some rocks that you can go and mine.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know,
or like the No Man's Sky problem of like trying to imagine a you know, galaxy spanning many types of life proliferating or whatever, and ultimately they can't, like, that's too much detail for humans to make, and our procedural systems all look the same.
Yeah.
I mean, the No Man's Sky thing is it's like it's all different, but it's all the same.
Yeah, it's all different, but it's all the same. I think one day someone will do, you know, space exploration on a planetary scale in an interesting way, but nobody's done it yet.
Yeah,
I would agree. It's really hard.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like I was missing anything not being able to go to the planet.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense. Like, it sounds like it is strictly focused on the spacefaring. Who cares about what's happening on the ground?
And we left those, right? We left the planets to be in space.
Their story kind of supports that as well, where there's like, theoretically there are people living on these planets, but in the time frame of the game, what matters is their infrastructure in space and their ability to maintain it. And if they were to lose that, they'd probably build it again in 100 years or something.
Yeah.
But it would be hard.
Huh. Okay. Well, I think I want it.
How much? Let's go through some more of the frustrations.
Yes. It's
got some.
I think Paul hasn't told enough of his story playing this game.
Okay, so let's just go back to the start of the game. Uh-huh. You've done the ship tutorial now.
Yeah,
you've started a new game in the ship tutorial. Then you go to the next one, which is the combat tutorial. So you start a new game in the combat tutorial.
Yep.
And you do that as well.
This is not, none of this is integrated in the actual game.
This is new games where you start a new start to learn how to
do a specific thing. Your previous insight of like they realized this was really bad and they implemented in a way that they already had, which is new games, a tutorial.
That's exactly how it felt.
Okay.
So then we're at like fourth start, right?
Yeah. Fourth new game, so you can start a new game.
And now I know how to shoot, and I know how to fly around.
Yeah.
So I pick, there's three options for the different starts. One of them is sandbox, one of them is guided, and the other is something in between. Like, it's meant to be different levels of hand-holding for starting the game. So this time I think I picked the guided one.
Yeah.
Where you start as like a space pirate or something.
Okay.
And so you spawn in your ship. You've got like a little dude pop up in the corner on the comms and he's like, go to this place.
Okay.
I don't remember why, but yeah, he was like, go to this place.
Yep.
And then you've got like a thing on the HUD pops up to indicate which direction to go.
Uh-huh.
So you fly through, you go through the gate and then it says, go to this place. This time there's no direction. Okay. And you're like,
this is the guy.
Did I like break it? Like, does the guy pop up or something? Like, uh-huh. So you fly around for a bit trying to like
try to find the guy,
to find some sort of hint as to you find a gate.
Yeah,
there's other gates around, so you're like, okay, I'll go through the gate. Uh-huh. And the quest updates. It's like you've made progress. It's like, go to this place. You're in sector C now. You need to go to like sector F.
Okay.
And you have no idea where sector F
you've
is.
You've got no idea.
And then it's like, find something in sector F and you have no idea where that is.
Yep.
Mm.
And then you can...
To find the gates, by the way,
uh-huh.
you pick a direction and you fly.
Okay.
Well, there is... It might be in yet another tutorial, but there is a scanner that will help you find gates. I didn't learn how to use that for a while. Because you can spot them with your eyeballs.
Yeah.
But sometimes they're like slightly out of the field of view and you've got to fly around for a bit before you can.
Yeah, or there's like a really bright, colorful planet and the gate is like, you know, against the planet. Yeah. And you're not going to see that one. Especially if it's like they're kind of light blue and metallic. And so if there's like a blue gas giant,
you're just not going to see it. So anyway, that's how you get to like playthrough 5. Okay. Cause you abandon that one thinking that you've just like messed it up somehow.
Yep.
And first you like Google how to start X4. In which you find like a Steam post that's actually really good. There's a really good guide on the Steam community forums of someone who was just like, here's how you start playing this game. And
was they're like, by a dev.
Okay, so, no, it wasn't. And they're like, pick the Terran Cadet start. Because if you've got this expansion that's got the Terran Cadet, it's got like the best tutorial for like how to actually start the game.
Okay.
And through reading that post, I found that like, yeah, you do pretty immediately still end up in another mission where it's like just go to wherever.
Yeah.
And you do have to find your way there.
Yeah.
But
it's not so far away.
So what are the tools you have available to you to actually navigate then? If it's telling you to go to specific places and then not actually telling you how to get to those places.
So once you know about the tools, you have pretty powerful tools to explore and discover, and it doesn't take long to explore a sector. But the problem is that there's no like help text in this game. There's no
onboarding like at all.
Yeah, there's no like, I see you're trying to find the next sector. Well, firstly, this is what a sector is. If you look at your map, you'll be like, okay, this is a map
tutorial.
Yeah.
Oh, and the map as well. The map bit is like kind of fantastic because you're playing this futuristic sci-fi simulation, right?
Uh-huh.
Like in space, there's a whole space spanning civilization.
Yeah.
Is
it a cloth
you've
map?
Got your map.
Uh-huh.
And all you can see is the stuff that you've found. And no matter what you do, no one will give you a map.
Okay.
It's only ever.
You cannot buy a map.
You can't buy a map. You can't.
Okay.
And stuff is somewhat randomly generated, so you can't even like really look at other maps online to find out where stuff is.
They don't randomly generate connections between the main fundamentals. You could look at a map.
Okay.
But I think that the map and the connection system, because this is a setting where faster than light. Wormhole gates essentially connect space.
Yeah.
So the reason and like what is connected to what is not very intuitive, and it essentially forms a topology, but you can't like guess at what it would have been without understanding that first. And because the player doesn't understand it yet, looking at a map of X4 probably does not super help them.
Right.
That's true too.
Interesting.
So yeah. Yeah, like, bit of a new player problem.
Gone through all this and you've like actually explored places and put satellites down. You've also got to put satellites down. You find that out way too late. Dropping random satellites everywhere is fantastic because that's how you get like random missions and
really good.
Trade updates and things like that.
Okay,
but it's just not ever really once you're like 10 hours in, the game is like fantastic.
Right,
but you've really got to.
Well, it's one of those games. 30 hours in, it gets good.
It's RTFM the game basically.
RTFM.
Read the bleeping manual.
Oh yeah, you're right. Okay.
No, and they do have a manual. They have like they run a Confluence wiki themselves.
Yeah, there was an encyclopedia in the game.
Half of it is in German, of course.
In like online?
Yeah.
Because they have the encyclopedia in the game.
Yes, they have.
You search for key like I've.
They have an in-game wiki of sorts.
Yeah, like I've done this for when you're building ships and selecting weapons, you can right click on the weapon and go encyclopedia, and then it's got a whole like thing.
Yeah, which is a really great feature. Games need either like excellent tooltips or that kind of thing.
Yeah,
especially complicated ones. So
there's also a thing that like I am slightly annoyed how they are just like, oh, it's just in the encyclopedia for almost anything really. Like when I was building up a station, and it was like I wanted to create a supply chain of things.
Yeah.
And I knew I had to build build something that makes a product, but then I don't know the resources I need to actually make that product until I look it up in the encyclopedia that says it takes these two resources and then outputs this one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, great, I figured that out, but didn't tell me to do that. It didn't just clearly say anywhere like this refinery needs these two items.
And
like,
if you're in the station builder, you can't like, you mouse over something, it will not tell you its inputs or outputs in a tooltip or anything helpful like that. No, you have to go to a different page.
Yeah.
Now, do you think these were conscious decisions they made to like enhance the like immersion?
No.
Or do you think it was just like oversight?
I think that they're not super good at UX.
Mods that would like sort some of these things
out? They are very modding friendly, and there are definitely mods that sort some things out. I think there's even a couple of UI mods, but I don't know how moddable their UI is.
I have seen UI mods, but I haven't used them.
Yeah, I haven't used them either.
Because I don't want to make the UI more confusing by having
mods. If there was a mod that like made the UI nice.
Yeah.
Good.
That game
good
would
even.
Be, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Good UI would do a lot for the game.
There's so many confusing things.
There's so many things. Like just ordering a ship to do a trade and continually do a trade is like so many step process and not intuitive. There's games like Anno I've played where setting up trades, you figure it out within seconds by just trying to do it. In this game, it's like, okay, first you have to like, you have to click on the ship. Great, cool, easy. Then you have to find a tab in this selection of tabs.
You've actually got to hit the info button first, right?
You don't have to hit the info button.
Oh, yeah, there's an
you
info button.
You have to find the orders button, which is like one of the tabs. The info button is one of the tabs.
Oh, okay.
The orders button is another tab.
It's a sub-tab of the info button.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And then you have to select, it's by default, it's on hold position, which means it just does a order and then stops. You have to then change that to repeat order. And you're like, okay, great, I've done that. And but then you have to hit the accept button, which is weirdly difficult to see.
Otherwise, it'll lose it.
Otherwise, it'll lose it.
Yep.
Then you have to like, then it's like a little more straightforward. Then you just like, from your map screen, you have a trade icon that highlights all the trade options on the screen.
Sure.
And then you just look at that and go, right click on one thing and say, buy this, and then right click on another thing and then say sell there, and then away you go. But I had to Google how to do all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had to, not only did I have to Google it, I had to watch a YouTube video of how to do it. And multiple times pausing to find the tabs. Because the guy's just like, oh, and then you just go change the from hold position to thing and press accept. And I was like, whoa, what was that? That was a completely different tab that just popped up.
Oh, yeah. Have you guys figured out yet that you can have your... you can have your list of ships and assets and stations on the left side, and that on the right hand side of the screen, there's an info button that you can open over there.
That's
so that
exactly
you can
split
how
it. I play the game.
Yeah.
I basically feel like I need two monitors. For
yes.
This.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is starting to sound a lot like Excel.
Well, it's not exactly. It's sort of so.
Excel is more user friendly for me.
Yeah. Excel. Okay. Excel makes more sense. It's kind of like this phase of the game is sort of, or this area of the game is a little bit like playing an RTS, but where an RTS knows that if you like click on your gather unit and you click on the thing that they gather, it knows what you want to do, and like Anno knows what you want to do when you set up a trade route. It's like you've got a trade ship, you want to trade this thing. Okay, I'm going to do a bunch of stuff. I'm going to pathfind there, I'm going to collect, I'm going to return, and I'm going to repeat. And all of that stuff is just like assumed, and it's very smooth. In this one, they decided that, like, well, we're just going to let the player program their own units. And you can.
Yeah.
Like, they have loops. They have, like, breaks. They've got, you know, you can set up, like, weird little if-else sort of, like chains.
There are a lot of random settings, too, for how a ship will behave under different conditions.
But I think this is a good examination of why the, you know, the standard RTS or the Anno thing is better. Because you don't, you mostly don't use, like, the what you could do. Probably the most interesting, like, you could set up maybe an interesting patrol route, or for trading, the most interesting thing I've done is do a bunch of conditional trades, which does get very, like, delightfully complicated, but was it worth someone not being able to go mine some rocks in return? I'm not sure.
It sounds like they kind of engineered it around the edge cases or around the specialized user.
I think it's
general user.
Really targeted at being, you know, 40, 50 hours in, and then from there.
God,
I have. We could probably add on. I have some frustrations from beyond the 50-hour mark as well.
How many hours do you think you have in that?
I don't know, because I AFK games a lot. I'll like start playing, and then my nieces will, you know, want to rambunks around or like use a computer or something. I'll tab it, and I think it would probably be close to 200 though. Wow. I think because I haven't been playing Zelda this week, so
yeah.
got a little bit more X4 progress in.
Yeah, I haven't played since Zelda.
I played a little bit this morning.
Oh yeah,
but I was trying to set up a trade. No. No, I was trying to, because there's another mission where a dock's building and it needs supplies. So I was trying to set up like my first trade route.
Oh yeah.
How did that go?
Your first swing at trucking.
I got the first delivery going there, and then another ship came in and ordered it to dump its cargo. It was pirate.
Oh, sweet. Well, so did you? Were you?
And then it messaged you and said, quick, how do I do this? I don't know. I really need to know.
Yeah, the captain's
You don't have a lot of time to respond. That ship got blown up. So I might have reloaded the save before that and then not continued.
Yeah,
that's a thing.
That makes sense.
There are these global orders for your fleet you can control. And there's quite a lot of them. And they're all like, if this happens, what should I do? And by default, it's things like if the cops want to scan a ship or whatever, one of your ships, that ship will contact you and ask you what that you should do.
Yeah.
Or if a pirate comes along and says, dump your cargo, your ship will contact you and say, what shall I do? And then dialogue options come up where it's like, you know, flee, fight, or like comply, you know? So I was constantly getting that. And one, it's just annoying that it's constantly popping up when you've got like dozens of trade ships around.
If you are a space trucker empire, there's a lot of dealing with questions.
And I've also found that if you are in other menus when that happens, you can just not get those options.
Yeah, I didn't see any options.
Yeah,
and the ship dropped its cargo and then got blown up.
Anyway. No, I think the default, if you didn't change anything, and this is a little inexplicable to me. I think what a trade ship does when a pirate asks it to drop its cargo is it attacks the pirate with its one dinky turret or whatever.
Yeah. It's definitely like the basic trade ship that you get for one of the early missions as well.
It'll have like maybe one gun.
I think
Captain's got like one eye.
I think they go,
one working arm.
The eyes is he has guns.
Well, that captain sounds like maybe he could do something with his one gun. But,
yeah. And guy was one of those four-eyed guys as well, so he's really lost a lot of eyes.
I'm not sure why. I noticed that I had to change the setting because by default, You if you have a run-in with a pirate, I'm not even sure if they contact you by default, but they definitely attack.
Mm. And that's I heard the audio way message. Less good
than run away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that as well. Like, you hear the audio message, and then you go out of your menu, and there's nothing.
Yeah.
And then you get a thing saying your ship was destroyed.
Yeah.
So you can, in the global commands...
Yeah, I played around with some of those. Yeah. I just need to, like, change some more of them. So you don't... What I was going to do was just give it an escort. Because I've got some ships that aren't doing anything. So
yeah.
I'm pretty sure I can do, like, a fleet and just
have an escort
run.
Is it going through such dangerous space?
I think so.
Okay.
Pirates also, like...
Yeah, there's pirates
just, there's just piratey space, and pirates, you're not super likely on any given run to encounter pirates, but if you have 18 runs going constantly, you'll be encountering pirates every 5 minutes.
I think I'm such
your
a...
first one, apparently.
Or
or the very first one.
I wonder if there's a script to make sure that happens.
Or something. It feels like the sort of thing you don't want to happen on the first run, though. It's like, the player's trying to trade... Hey, let's blow it up.
This
will be really fun.
There's some inexplicable low, like, introductory balance design in this game, or design balance. I guess. There's have you met the pyramidal aliens? You might not have.
No, I don't think so.
But I think Blake.
I have.
Well, there's these aliens. There's two types of small, universally hostile ships, and they're both like. They're both space jerks. Mm. Some of them get real big.
Oh.
Some of them don't get real big, and they're just like little purple pyramids.
Yeah, okay, I have, but only recently.
Yeah, okay. So if you're flying around in a small ship, you can dodge almost every, weapon projectile in this game. But one of the common low-level missions and a common low-level enemy are these little swarmer guys that have hit scan beam weapons.
Okay.
And they are incredibly dangerous to new players in new ships. But they are also the thing that you're commonly asked to deal with as a new player in a new ship. Okay.
When I was a new player, I basically avoided all combat until I got a what is it? A Corvette or a gunship.
Oh, yeah, until like I got a gunship. Ship. Yeah. You can do that. But as somebody who kind of likes flying fighters, I definitely dove right in and was like, okay, give me a job to do in this fighter. And they were like, protect this miner from these Ka'ak aliens. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. And I was like, I cannot fight these. I get in range of these guys and I'm like dying instantly. And it turns out that's just what those guys are like. You just want bigger ships to fight them and you shouldn't try in your small ship.
Yep. I just didn't try fighting at all in my little ship. Like
I did lots. I still do lots of fighting. The space combat is really fun.
Yeah, the flying simulation is cool, actually. And trying to beat things, gives you a reason to upgrade your ship and everything.
Yeah, like I did get a decent enough fighter where I could take on one or two other fighters.
Yeah,
ultimately, once I got my first gunship, I was like, this is me. Just a big building that has like six guns on it. And I'm like, that's great.
So we've covered, it sounds like there's obviously like economic progression. Mm-hmm. You can buy bigger and better ships, you can trade, there's, a building of wealth. It sounds like there's also some sort of research element, right?
Yeah. And the research is another thing. The research is locked behind story progression.
Okay. So you may never see it. You might never see it.
Yeah, because Josiah for ages was talking about like research. And that there's a tab with research, and I'm like, I've not seen this. I don't know what you're talking about.
Blake is like a surprisingly localized, Blake's gone a pretty far, long way in the game and is really just like focused on this small, dense sector of the galaxy.
Right.
The network.
Yeah, because there's also, you started off in one of the latest expansion area.
Yeah.
I haven't even visited yet.
The whole reason I bought the game is because there's these cool like space cuttlefish that are an alien species, and you can like start with the quest to like reconnect them to the network and then you do, and it's like I think that's actually it was the perfect way for me to start the game because I wanted to do space trucking essentially.
Yep.
and they need space trucking. They have like a cuttlefish humanitarian crisis that you have to resolve with trucks.
And a dock that they really want you to build.
Yes, and a dock that they really want you to build and all sorts. Yeah, but But yeah, that like is this isolated region, and you kind of get that under control, and then you start being like, oh no, I gotta import things. So you start going all over the network looking for stuff, and right. you run into all sorts of things. But you could also just build a little kingdom in one sort of like the place that Blake is playing is very interconnected and self-sufficient in a smaller region.
Right.
And you don't have to go and find the various other plots.
Yeah, it's got like a giant highway going through it.
Yeah, but you did eventually find the I guess the complexity of that area is like really high as well. You don't feel like you've explored that small area much. Yeah. It's kind of like the core of the game.
I did go out and start exploring more sections, and I found the criminal faction who have outlawed food
or water.
Water.
Yeah, they've got a lock on water.
It's illegal to have food rations in their territory.
Yeah. Well, no, so factions outlaw things much, you know, in a kind of like the way that you would expect. They outlaw space weed, and apparently it's prohibition because you can't ship alcohol or something.
Really?
Yeah. Crazy. Space fuel is just booze, I think.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah. There's a drink
called rocket fuel.
Yeah. So they've got these bans, and their police ships will like check your ships, and if you have some, you'll lose some reputation, and you'll have to, you know, treat the police ships like a pirate ship, essentially. Do you drop your cargo, or do you fight, or do you run, but there is a faction in the game that is essentially using these rules to be a racketeering syndicate.
Right.
And so they're like, there are lots of ice asteroids in our space. Uh-huh. It is illegal to have ice in your cargo hold or water because our ships are going to, like all of the ships who come in here to try and get ice or water are going to be asked to give those over to our ships because we're squatting here.
I'm pretty sure you can also, once you have a station, set your own contraband rules, right?
Yeah, once you control a sector.
Do you control a sector?
I feel like I just got that from a quest. I swear I
did. You do get a station from a quest.
Oh, hey, this sector's yours now. We've got a lot of problems, but I think you'll work it out. Okay, I gotta go. Bye.
Yeah. There's a quest that is like 100% like that. So the way you start on this like research quest is different.
Yeah.
The way I started on it is that this big station appears, and I guess actually
it's the same. Kind it is the same. Way. It's just a different story around place. It, but the result is the same.
This person does dump a station on you. If you have an administration module on your station, you are vying for control of a sector. So they may have had you do that.
Nothing says that.
It's pretty obvious. If you've got an administration module on your station, and you're vying control of this for the sector.
There's also as I'm describing this real question of do I own the sector or not? I have no idea, right?
I think I had that.
I don't think it would tell me if I did or didn't.
It goes green on the map instead of blue.
So it's definitely green.
Oh yeah. So you own a sector.
I don't own a sector.
I own some sectors much later in the game. But
that's because you waged a giant war against Xenon and actually took over some of their sectors.
I took over the robot space.
Which is impressive.
It's pretty weird in there. Yeah, but it actually, like, even that is really interesting in that opening, like, that up suddenly made this trade lane between two factions really safe, and there's tons of traffic, and so, like, people, like, land on my trade station all the time because I made this, like, weird lane.
This is why I get sidetracked from the main story, because I've got all these shipping things going around, and these Xenon are interrupting my shipping lanes, and I'm like, the only way to get rid of them is to basically, like, invade their space and knock them out completely.
Well, or build a defensive bulwark.
Just build a loaded defense station. But those are expensive.
So, what are there? Are there any other progression elements? Like, is there? Do you have like experience?
Oh, there's faction there loot. Rep.
Like,
there's...
if you're blowing up ships in combat, are you looting them?
Ships drop ship specific loot. But
that's cool.
They can also drop their cargo holds, which is economically important.
Right.
There's piracy.
Figure out how to sell it.
Yeah.
Is where I'm at currently. Yeah. Yeah, my entire cargo is filled with stuff.
Oh, this one's filled with water. I'm sure this will be fine.
Yeah.
Did you...
Hello, officer. I have this entirely legal cargo hold.
What do you got in there? Oh, just water.
Uh-huh. Okay. Did you figure out about the cargo magnet?
Yes.
It took me so long.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't know about that. I think I saw a post Googling on the internet that was like, "Boy, I hope you're not flying through all those crates." I was like,
I'm playing with the controller, and one of the joystick down buttons is the magnet. And I remember flying around and just being like hitting it and hearing this like, whoo, and I was like, "What the hell is that? I don't know what the hell that is."
It's a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, and then I'm like, because there's no cargo around or anything. Vacuum. And then at some point, I did it near cargo, and it just went, and it all like sucked towards me. And I was like, oh my God, it's a cargo magnet.
So you play on controller.
Yeah.
Do you guys play on controller?
Both controller and keyboard.
Oh, wow.
Actually, I play on keyboard as well. Keyboard. Yeah.
Because they don't, I've played like Rebel Galaxy recently, and they actually have good controller support where their menus work on the controllers. But I think in X4, right? So you need a keyboard.
Can navigate, but not well.
Not okay. Yeah. Because especially when UI you're clicking on things
and like having to set up and right clicking on stuff like.
Oh yeah, you know, there's context menus for everything.
Yeah, like it's just easier. I usually just put the controller down and use the mouse at that point.
Right. Now,
I know that you bought a VR headset when you got Elite Dangerous.
Yeah.
Does it support VR?
No, it doesn't. Actually, could you mention that? Because I went through a whole process
trying to get it to
use VR because I saw a post on Steam of someone who had set it up and was like just saying how amazing it is, and they're like, "Oh my God, the scale is incredible! Like you really feel immersed in it." And I was like, "Oh, cool!" And I went through all these steps.
Yeah, it turns out he was just duct taping his monitor to.
Essentially, but in VR. Huh. So all it was that I had to download like other third party things to get this thing to work. And like all it was that like when you go into VR, it's just a giant monitor in front of you, and you can wrap that monitor around.
Yeah,
so it fills your whole like view.
But it doesn't react to you turning your head, for example.
It does.
Okay.
Yeah, like. I had to download a whole head tracking for that. Well, it does, but like it's not like actual proper
VR. The game is not built to
support which feels
VR.
Like a bit of a miss, right? Like it seems like space sims are the perfect use case for VR.
Yeah.
I think VR probably would be pretty cool if it was supported.
Yeah, like it has. You can turn your head in the cockpit.
Yeah, I actually use that head look a lot because there's a lot of like space flying, and sometimes I need to like strafe past something, but I need to keep my engines oriented a certain way, but I need to like look at it.
Like it is cool, but
but it's not there.
It's not there. Maybe X5.
Yeah. I mean, actually, this game is a lot older than popular usable VR, right?
It's 2018, right?
Yeah.
So,
it's not that old.
I mean, 2018 VR was around, but
if anything, it was after the peak of VR.
Yeah, it probably was.
The peak of VR is like 2015-ish. Yeah.
But I bet like development of this game, they definitely weren't like thinking of VR because it wouldn't have been a big thing, I think.
Right. Now, you got the full game with all the DLCs.
Yep.
How much did that cost you?
I don't remember.
$120, I think.
Okay, how many DLCs are there?
It was a few. Four. I think it was like four, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I got it in a big sale, which was... Oh, I don't know how. It was like half off, so it may have been like $80 or $60 for me or something.
I got the base game first.
Yeah.
And then tried it. For quite a few hours, and then was like, okay, this game is cool. Now I'm going to buy all the DLC.
Right, okay.
Whereas I looked at it, and then I clicked the expansions, and it was like, Blake owns this. And I clicked the next expansion, and it was like, Blake owns this. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay. I want to play what he's been
talking
about.
Well, Blake owns it.
Yeah. Well,
the thing is, $120 for a AAA title is what you pay for any PlayStation game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what Diablo was.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is that out yet or is that still
next
month?
Week? Okay. Next Friday.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Shit.
Oh, whoa. I didn't realize that was so soon.
Yep.
Excited?
Yeah, a little bit.
Are you going to stop playing X4 in favor of Diablo?
I stop playing X4 all the time.
Yeah. Stop X4 in the usual X4 session.
Maybe it's a more pointed question for Blake. Are you going to stop playing X4 and Zelda?
That's tough three big games at once. I think three is too many. I can't take that much.
So which one? Which one loses out?
It's probably X4, but X4 feels more like a game that I will like continually play.
Yeah, it's like, something you can return to.
Yeah, I can always return to pieces. It does. There is a feeling of work to it.
Oh yeah,
especially with the way I'm playing. Like,
honestly, Blake. No surprise there. given how you play every game.
Like the other day, I was like realizing that my shipping had become less profitable.
I'm gonna have to make some firings.
Because all I've been doing.
Oh no. They're poor families.
Can't afford to pay these people. Wait, I don't pay these people.
Well, at least that's one thing. You don't have an ongoing payroll.
Yeah,
you have
many employees and you pay them a one-time fee.
Labor
is quite abstracted.
Yeah, yeah, that seems ethically questionable.
They're simulated little guys.
500 credits or something, and everything's in the hundreds of thousands of credits, and you can just buy a dude for $500.
Yeah. Oh, and he's like, yep, I'll join.
What you're describing is slavery. Oh, jeez.
They do have a weird thing of when you're on the small ships. So if you've got a pilot on one of your ships, right, you can just like tell them to get out of the seat and take over.
Yeah.
And on the big ships, that's fine because they just go through a door and you assume they're in other quarters, right? Yeah. But on the small fighters, they go into I mean, they almost are because they go into the same place that you do when you exit your ship in your spacesuit.
Yeah.
And it basically is like a small thing that's like the size of a
like
shower.
An airlock?
A telephone booth.
Yeah. And the door closes and then opens again and they're gone. And I've like walked out. I've walked around the
He's
ship.
He's holding onto the side.
Yeah. When I'm docked, I've walked around the ship. To be like, where could this guy have gone? Because I just don't see any space where he could possibly be hanging out.
Yeah, in some of the ships, it makes sense. And then in others, it's like, why does this fighter actually have three crew? There's no seats. There's no other compartments.
Yeah.
And you'll get like those maintenance missions to get a pilot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the game will like convince you that you should get a pilot for the ship, which does actually kind of come in handy.
Actually, the pilot, because you can communicate with them at any distance, if you want to play a little bit more iron mode or whatever, where you try and continue at all costs instead of like loading from save, I expect is most of what people would do for X4. But if you want to have the experience of getting spaced by a fight and then needing to have somebody come and pick you up, having a pilot or two and like a little runner craft is really useful.
Yeah.
I actually kind of wish they've got a lot of different systems, but I think they don't have any way for you to ask the AI that's around, like a friendly faction or something, to come pick you up from space.
Right.
Uber. When they have that, like I way prefer Elite's Dangerous system of like you just pay a percentage, like you basically pay insurance and you get your ship back.
Yeah, but it's so immersive to be blown up in the middle of an enormous dogfight with a carrier and 120 fighters that you brought to this area or whatever, and your fighter gets blown up and you ask one of the other fighters to maneuver close by and like while bullets are flying, you try and get into the.
It is cool, but at the beginning of the game, when you have one ship and you lose in a dogfight with some Xenon, and then it's game over essentially.
That's it.
You're just floating until you run out of oxygen.
Yeah,
you can wait.
For full
space sim.
Yeah, that's right. I suppose it's very similar.
I'm 14 hours into this and I'm not having a good time. Oh yeah, what are you doing? Just floating. Just my oxygen's pretty low at this point, actually. Is there multiplayer?
I don't know. Is
no,
there? Don't
no. It's so. It's very like single player architecture. Yeah, cool. It's because it's simulating a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, I kind of assumed as much.
Yeah.
I was just curious.
Actually, from Stellaris, you may recall there's like synchronization across like, you know, tons and tons of little actors making choices is quite tricky.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Honestly, this game sounds like I would probably have fun 30 hours in. Is that about right?
Yeah.
If you're okay with just being mad at it for a while. You can have fun a lot sooner. Okay. You just got to embrace the like sheer madness as it is the start of that game.
Yeah, yeah. The learning curve is bad for it sure.
Really evolves to me when you're playing.
I mean,
like,
yeah.
like how I started for the first 10 hours is not how I'm playing
it's,
the game.
It's like
at
Mountain
all
Blade,
now.
Right?
Actually, Mountain Blade is a good.
It scales up.
Yeah.
Actually, and Mountain Blade's like points of friction as well, where you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't have enough agency at the moment, is kind of the trade-off with like all that simulation, right? Yeah. Where you just kind of need it to be that way if you're going to really simulate everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you don't have friendly abstractions for the player because those would kind of be exploitable.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this I'll probably pick it up when I'm done with Zelda in like 4 years.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll have added some more tutorials as new game starts that'll solve some of the problems.
You pick up the game and it'll be like 8 new games before you get to the
what
game.
To do when you're floating in space. I used to start off floating in space.
I think it's funny, Paul, that like, so this game, just when you load up, is overwhelming. But before you've even launched into the actual playing of the game, just on the menu,
yeah,
it was overwhelming.
Yeah,
before you like you load it up and go new game. Oh god, I'm overwhelmed.
But like oh, the kind of player I am, though, right? I'm like sandbox, new game, let's go. You know, like I've made the decision. I haven't really thought about
no
it.
Tutorial,
I'm just like, let's go.
Okay, smart. I could do this. Oh no,
I've played games before. How bad can it? How do I go forward, though?
Okay.
I'm in a chair, and I want to get out of the chair. How do I do that?
All right, well, we're out of time. Thank you so much for coming in, Josiah. What's the next inscrutable game you're going to tell us about?
Oh, boy, I don't know. It's hard to predict.
All right. Have you played Victoria 3?
No, I haven't played Victoria 3, actually.
I'm interested in that game.
Yeah. That will be pretty inscrutable.
It's more complicated than Crusader Kings.
Yeah, it's actually it's kind of a weird mix between Stellaris' pop system was from Victoria 2, so so it's like that, but on Earth and in a contemporary economy. Yep. Yeah.
If you've got questions about inscrutable games, you can email frenzyquestions@gmail.com. Just subject line should be Blake Y. We'll be back. Thanks again for coming in. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks. Bye. You have to recognize that monster parts are your weapons.
Yeah.
And so when you defeat a monster, although you don't have the weapon, you have the components of the weapon. So, like, even if you defeat, like, a stone talus, it doesn't...
What are those?
Those are the giant golem things that hurl boulders at you.
I haven't actually fought any of those, I don't think.
Have you fought anything with, like, a health bar that, like, comes up?
Yeah.
Like a Hinox
cube thing, series of cubes all jammed together.
Yep, the flux construct.
Yeah, so those ones I don't mind. Like I don't mind the combat with like the big things.
Yeah,
it's the
moblins,
you run into
moblins.
Like yeah, and what you get out of those like might be an arm, and I don't have enough inventory space to pick up another arm.
But you can fuse them to your weapons.
Yeah, but the weapons that I have, I've fused higher tier things to.
Sure. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I just try and avoid combat because I want to save the good weapons for the combat that
or
matters.
Do you have enough space to have a garbage sword for garbage monsters?
Not really. I only just found the inventory upgrade thing.
Yeah. I see the reasoning, and your complaint is not uncommon.
Yeah, but I just think it's like personally not so for me. It's the things that I got frustrated with Breath of the Wild, and I've sort of doubled down on that, but then made the stuff that I liked way more fun. So it's the fun, the bits that I enjoy are fewer, further between, and I enjoy them more.
I definitely have to, there's a mental shift for me where I have to accept that my good weapons are going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
But like I'm constantly coming across weapons that are pretty good, and then they're not as good as the ones I'm carrying because they're not fused with anything, and so I drop them or whatever. So I'm like actually flooded with weapons, and I have so many monster parts. The truth is, I could make as many weapons as I want.
Yes,
it's just.
But how many like Captain Threehorn or whatever do you have?
Quite a few now. Like the more you play, the higher tier the monsters get, and I think in fact the more you combat, you engage with it, the harder the enemies get. So you end up getting more and better materials the more you engage with the system. Yeah. It's a hidden mechanic, but
you might have to. I don't know. I went to a place very early on.
Yeah.
Where I started getting quite a few of those.
Yeah.
Didn't have any inventory upgrades at the time. Had like this massive power increase.
Yeah.
Had like a bunch of I think I had like a spear that was doing 50 or 60 damage or something. Well, and I've been without that since.
Right.
The way I play is that, maybe this is probably similar to how you play, is that you have an arsenal, right, of specialized weapons for certain things. So you've got like your ore breaker, or your like your rock smasher or whatever, that weapon. Then you've got your like day-to-day weapon, which is like fairly good, but not your highest damage thing. You know, so, and then you might have like in the elemental thing, that's one that I've got as well. So, and then depending on the encounter, you decide which tier of weapon you want to use, you know, like, oh, this is a big boss. I'm going to pull out my best weapon.
High damage.
But if it's like just a group of little guys, like maybe just like one bomb arrow will do the whole trick, you know.
You do get a lot of bomb arrows.
I've run out.
Oh, really?
they're all in the underground.
Yeah.
And so I need to go back into the underground and just,
in caves.
Oh, yeah, in caves. Yeah. I've got so many arrows, though.
Oh, yeah.
I've got, like, almost 200 arrows now.
What the fuck?
Yeah, if they all live in crates. And I made this discovery. I think there's a reason for that. Almost every item in the world will just sort of drop from a thing.
Yeah.
Like, that makes sense, like a source.
Mm.
But you can't really have arrows just lying on the ground because they're too small to be noticeable.
Yeah, that's true.
And so their solution is to put them in something really big.
The biggest thing, and you get like 3 arrows out of
them. Yeah.
And it's like, but the crate is the size of this room.
But then you understand that crates are where you get arrows.
Yeah.
And then it's just...
It was just like every... like I was scrounging for arrows for a long time. And then basically going through the Rito village stuff, I ended up just like... Every time I had a chance to get arrows, I just got arrows.
Like from the store?
From stores or just like out in the wild in crates. Like any chance to get arrows, I'm just like.
They're actually super generous with arrows.
Yeah.
They're super generous with virtually everything in the game, but it is a mental switch about the weapons because
I get it. Yeah.
There's a cost to using them, yes.
Yeah.
But they always give you that. They resupply you so often. It's just you have to make that.
Early on when I had really bad weapons and it was just like they seemed to break after every like second monster.
Yeah.
It did get and I did kind of start feeling like, oh man, I'm just going to avoid encounters, especially because like I didn't have that many weapons anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so if one breaks, it's like, well, that's half my arsenal disappeared. Like, but now I'm not worried about it.
Mm.
There is an example of a monster solving a Korok puzzle in Tears of the Kingdom. Where like a player stood on one of the like areas where it'll make the balloons appear. You know, you have to shoot it's like a little pinwheel or whatever. So the player was standing there and an Arakuda dove through the balloons.
Oh, wow.
Ooh.
And they got the Korok seed.
Wow.
Yeah, which it delivers to the player, obviously.
Yep.
You made this happen, I assume.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
Have you done any other temples? I've done 2 temples so far.
No, I've just done that one.
It's amazing that I've probably played 40 or more hours, at least, would be my guess.
Mm.
And I'm only on 2 temples.
There's so much. There's, like, I've been going around just doing the Breath of the Wild thing.
Yeah.
And the sky stuff I get is, like, when you go into when you shoot up to the tower, there's almost always some stuff to do around there. But the underground, I have visited, like, twice and I haven't been back and I'm just like there's a whole half of the game
it's literally the size of the overworld.
I found maps that are like treasure map.
Yeah.
The X is like so far away from where I've explored before.
Yeah, it's so good. It's literally, I found out, did I already talk about this? It's the inversion of the overworld.
Oh, wow. So it is interesting time savings for them, but also really creepy and cool.
Yeah, but like it means that when you're at the top of a mountain, if there's a shrine there, and you go down, you're at the bottom of a pit.
Yeah.
Oh, and so you have to climb to get out of it.
So it's literally like a Discworld that you're on two sides.
Wow. But the really clever thing is you don't know it because it's pitch black when you go down there.
Oh, yeah.
And the only way to explore is like by throwing these things that produce light.
Okay, yeah.
And you sort of slowly illuminate the area and you discover things. Like it's all masked. So you don't understand that that's the case until you've explored enough to be like, hang on.
And they don't have regions the same way, right? Like, because you have the big plants that you light, but it's not like it.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know, it illuminates an area, but it's not like now you can see this whole region.
When you illuminate multiple connected areas, it fills in those gaps.
Oh, okay, cool.
So as you the further you explore, the more illuminated it gets. Yeah. But you can't reach most of those light routes without, like, going through the darkness.
Yeah. It's great. I really liked how... So I got auto-build, I think, fairly early on. Uh-huh. Like, the first time I went down in the chasm, I ended up following the statues and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, that's neat. That's cool. And then didn't go back for ages. And then after that first temple... I went back to Lookout Landing, and they were like, oh, we pieced together this mural, and it says, if you follow these statues, you'll like get up to a thing. And I was like, wait, what? I've already done that. But then the game was just like, the character was like, oh, you've already done that? Oh my God, here's a load of quest rewards.
Yeah. Yep. They support pre-completion very well. In fact, the dialogue is really... I mean, I could talk about this all day, but like, they will acknowledge the time of day during a quest dialogue.
Oh yeah.
They'll be like, I was rebuilding a village, and they're like, it's weird that they're out this late, but it must mean you want to help me out with rebuilding.
That's great. That's good.
Whoa.
Or, you know, it's raining out, but, you know, there's hard work to be done.
Mm.
There was one, it was a challenge. I had to, like, fly a plane into a target, basically.
Yeah.
And it was raining at the time when they were giving me the instructions. They said, it might be hard to make out the target because it's raining right now, but, like, they put in there, and it wasn't, like, it was dynamic rain. It wasn't, like, scripted rain or anything.
Yeah.
It's just, it's really thorough. Yeah. There's no other word to describe.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. I like, this is a simple thing, I'm sure, but, like, just seeing a character that might be like walking along the road and then it starts to rain and then they freak out and like try to find shelter.
Yeah.
That's just cool.
You know what's really cool is you have these like wands that you can like hurl elemental.
Yeah.
If you, the different elements you hurl at them, everybody has a different response.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
And here's something really crazy. I want you to test this out. And if you play Zelda more, I want you to test this out as well. You know the Koroks where you have to find the partner?
Yep. The backpack ones.
Yeah. I have never found the tent first.
I've never found the tent first. I think it's like dynamic. I think it's always the single guy, and then when you activate it, the tent spawns somewhere else.
No, that's possible. I have another theory, which is that it's reversible.
Oh, you can bring that guy. No, I've tried that. You can't pick him up.
No, that's not what I mean. What I mean is whichever one you find first, the other one becomes the tent.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying as well. Like when they first spawn, different. There's just two single guys.
Yeah,
and no matter which one you pick, the other one, the tent spawns at them. Yeah, yeah.
And you're saying that's not the case?
No, I think that is the case. Okay, I'm agreeing with you.
Okay, okay,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Now, first of all, that's brilliant. But second of all, think about the fact that they would have had to essentially have designed a puzzle that is completable in both directions.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is
just
really, really impressive.
Like, this like. The stream or something that is only going in one direction is impossible to go the other. You have to make sure that it can go.
Yeah.
You're going up or down.
It has to be fun and challenging both ways. Like, it's such an interesting dilemma. Yeah. Anyway,
there's one that like Have you had any of those that you just gave up on?
Oh, heaps.
Yeah.
You know, do you remember Eventide Island?
Yes.
Do you remember how there's like a chunk of land that sticks out towards Eventide Island?
Yes.
And it's like kind of in Breath of the Wild, it's where you kind of try and glide down to Eventide from. Yep. There's a Korok standing up there, and he wants to go to Eventide Island.
Oh my god. Oh my god. That's so crazy.
So I haven't done that one yet.
I think some of those missions are made easier with horse and cart.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah, but I didn't realize that until because I just did a mission that basically I needed a horse and cart to move some people up to a ferry.
The ferry quest.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I'm playing with my big Ganon horse, and he cannot have a.
He can't have a bridle.
He can't have a bridle.
Oh.
And so like I'm basically like handicapping myself. I feel in some of those things because there were ones where it's like I had to just get from one
A to B,
A to B, and there was plenty of land to go across, but I ended up having to go through the water.
Uh-huh.
On a boat, but if I had a horse with a cart, I could just go along the land and it'll be fine.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, yeah. It's the one thing I don't like about that horse is that it can't have.
Get a different horse.
No,
you can have
like
multiple.
Yeah, I've got multiple horses. Yeah.
Well, then what's your complaint?
My complaint is that I don't want to switch horses. one horse that does it all.
Your jumbo demon horse that can't carry a bridle and it's the game is problem.
Yep.
Obviously, you need a jumbo demon cart.
Yeah, that's how it should be. The bridle just gets bigger when you put it on. Oh,
dear. Yeah. I want to talk
about... It just doesn't fit on any of the parts.
Yeah.
It's like you can attach one. It just can't go anywhere. It's
stuck between trees all the time.
Yeah. I was so stoked that the horses carried over.
Yeah. They didn't for me, but I that may have been because I didn't register any horses, or maybe because
really?
I played on like master mode. So I
thought you would have registered loads of horses.
I would have thought so too, but it's possible that I was on master mode and it doesn't carry across from different versions of the save.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
Did you uninstall it?
I wonder don't if that's think a so. Thing. It was. I think it's a game card for Breath of the Wild.
Yeah,
I was really impressed that I called my first horse both times dog.
Yeah, that's impressive consistency.
Yeah. I call every horse roach.
Roach.
So I have like, I don't know, 8 roaches.
I just name them by their color.
If you were going to name a horse roach in Zelda, shouldn't you... You got to find a character that you like/dislike in world and name your horse that.
Mm.
That's the...
That would easily be Addison.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who's that?
The sign guy.
Oh, God. The sign guy. Oh, my God.
The horse's name is Addison.
Addison.
Yeah. That bloody sign guy. I'm getting sick of him.
But his rewards are great.
I know. Every time I'm just like, okay, I'm just going from here to there. And there's like, oh, there's a fucking sign guy.
It's funny because Stacey bumped into that dude so many times. And it was ages until I found him because I just keep flying over everything.
Oh, man. Yep.
Oh,
he's
man.
Just like, what does he think he's doing?
He's a terrible builder.
Yeah,
but I like that they call him Addison, and he's putting up ads.
Oh wow, yeah, that's clever. I literally didn't notice his name. I'm terrible with names.
Well, I noticed it because everybody employed by that company has to have "son" as their end of their name.
Yeah,
and so I was looking for clues.
Clever.
There are some shrines. Do you remember on Eventide Island? Why are we talking about Zelda? Sorry.
Because it's
I could easily talk about Zelda for like 4 hours. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do sound all right?